What's going on, everybody? And thanks for tuning in to Run Up the Numbers with myself, DJ Ambush, and Ken Jones of the Numbers 96.7 FN KNUM Portland. The Numbers is Portland, Oregon's only Black-led radio station focusing on the entire Black music experience. Music is such an important part of Black culture. We've been given the opportunity to represent and share a myriad of moods, expressions, and ideas through this medium. Our programming is a combination of music and talk, and in both cases, we've seized the opportunity to uplift Black and brown voices that may have faced obstacles in the past in the pursuit of sharing their experiences with their own community. We're a community-focused media entity. Our listeners can count on us to give them the information that we all need to propel us into a prosperous, sustainable future. In that pursuit, it's important that we align ourselves with the right community partners, organizations and individuals that truly understand our station's mission. And with all that having been said, we're extremely excited about this new partnership with the Community Energy Project. Because of this new amazing relationship, in the coming months, we'll be delivering monthly episodes in addition to our weekly news broadcasts exclusively on the Numbers Podcast Network. We'll be in discussion with members of the community and community-focused organizations about the work the Community Energy Project has been doing, especially around energy efficiency upgrades. Stay tuned for informational ways that we can go about cutting down your energy costs with free energy upgrades. You'll have opportunities to engage with the CEP staff to gain a better understanding of the process. We'll be in conversation with small businesses that also benefit from the program, as well as homeowners that will be going through the program. Ultimately, better energy practices will lead to a healthier environment. So having an understanding of what those benefits will look like in the short term and revealing the processes behind getting programs like this the support they need is really important in spreading the word and making this a group effort. In this first episode, I'm sitting down with Sam Barrasso, program manager at the Portland Clean Energy Fund. Sam explains the relationship between PCEF and the Community Energy Project. We also discuss the importance of changing our relationship with energy for a more sustainable future. Good morning, Sam. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you for having me here, Sam.
It's a pleasure. So can you tell us, what is the Portland Clean Energy Fund? What exactly do they do?
Appreciate that. So the Portland Clean Energy Fund is a program within the city of Portland that invests in climate action that advances racial and social justice. It came about and it is a labor of love of the community and organizations that work on behalf of people of color, communities of color, and they put this on the ballot after years of just work and organizing and relationship building in 2018. And it passed on the ballot in November 2018 with 65% of the vote. Of Portland voters. And so it is the first ever climate fund created and led by communities of color in the US as part of a bigger coalition of progressive businesses, environmental groups, labor, and so many others that made this a reality. And what it does, and maybe let me get to that, because that's the real part. What it does is, you know, it's a fund, and so, you know, it's a fund that's populated by, there's a gross receipts tax on certain businesses that make over $1 billion nationally, at least $500,000 locally, that generates about $40 to $60 million every single year, that nonprofit organizations can apply to do these projects that are addressing climate action, that not only address climate action, but also advance racial and social justice. So those two have to go hand in hand in our projects.
So what type of projects, would be the perfect fit for this fund?
You know, this is something we wrestled with a lot. There are things that are defined within our code or the areas of funding that we can fund. And I'll get into that. Mm-hmm. But overall, from the way we approach this in true spirit to the way that the program was created and it originated within the community, it really is a program that's responsive to the needs within boundaries that are coming from community. And so I would say we probably don't have perfect projects, but we have different things that we look for in those projects that are guided by a lot of input from the community. The kind of projects that we could invest in are clean energy projects, and that's about actually 40 to 60% of our funding has to go there. Okay. These are for your homes, you know, our single family homes, our apartment buildings, also our schools, our commercial buildings, to making sure those homes and buildings are operating efficiently. So it's going out there and making sure that the outside of a building is actually really tightly sealed, so that as we heat up our buildings, as we cool our buildings, we're able to do so in a way that doesn't waste a lot of energy and increase our bills and result in high bills. So a lot of the work is about efficiency of the buildings that we live in, that give us comfort, that give us shelter, and making sure that those buildings are not only like operating efficiently, but are also healthy, that we don't have mold coming through in our buildings, that we don't have asbestos, that we don't have radon. So it's about making sure as we do that work that we're able to address some of those other things and make sure that as part of that, people have more money going to their pockets, are saving more on their monthly bills, and also are creating less emissions because we're using less energy. So that's just one example of the kind of projects we have, some of the kinds of projects we have, and I know we'll chat about more. And then some of the others are the stuff that people are used to seeing, like solar panels on roofs. And so there are other funding areas around green infrastructure. This is about, you know, and regenerative agriculture. It's about community gardens, it's about street trees, other things. And then we've also got a good chunk of funding dedicated to workforce and contractor development, making sure that we have more diverse folks working on these jobs and leading these jobs. But I can get into a little bit of that too.
Excellent. Sam, is there any overlap in the projects that you're working in and that you at the organization funds in transportation? I know you talked about some of the houses and doing some of the upgrades, and I know people are getting electric cars. Like, is there any overlap with maybe the e-bikes that we're seeing? Is there any overlap with transportation?
You know, this is one of those areas that it's a challenging one. Within the initiative itself and the way that was put in front of voters and the language that was ultimately adopted, transportation wasn't explicitly called out. And there's a range of reasons I think we can get into on what that means, why, what was happening at the time. We have 5% of the fund is set aside for what we call innovation or other projects. That's where we expect to see transportation projects come in. So it's a smaller portion of the fund. And I don't want to discount the fact that transportation is a real area that matters both for Black and Brown folks in terms of making sure we're able to move around town efficiently, cleanly. And it's an area where we have a lot of emissions in our area too. It's also something to be just blunt about. Yeah. Our fund, even at the high end of $60 million a year, there's a whole lot of needs in transportation investments, and the need around transportation is significant. Yeah. I will state that that's something that we're going to continue to be chatting about, and it's a longer conversation, but there's a place for it in the fund, e-bikes and those sorts of things, certainly eligible, but it isn't as explicitly called out.
That's excellent. That's great to hear, especially considering that there's a section carved out for innovation. I keep thinking about, you know, all the different ideas that some of the students that we work with come up with, you know, just for new ideas to flip and bounce existing infrastructures and energy formats to create something new. And I love that everyone is thinking cleaner, more efficient now. I remember being in high school and hearing about recycling, and it just seemed like, you know, all right, it's something that we did that was a part of a small fraction of what our culture was. And now with us facing the, you know, the climate crisis that we are across the world, people seem to be taking all of this a lot more seriously. So you mentioned this is a climate fund. I've never heard of a climate fund. Is this a brand new concept? I mean, is this something that we're seeing in all the states? Tell us about a climate fund.
You know, what I'll say is, you know, in Portland, we're a region and a state that has been known for doing a lot of green, environmentally friendly things for, you know, for well over 40, 50 years, you know, for a long, long time. And yet, at the same end, all of those programs, those benefits have been intentionally set up to benefit oftentimes homeowners, wealthier people. And so we may have called them something different, but we have a long history here, and we might not call it climate fund. We have a long history of creating energy programs, other things that tend to benefit, you know, better off homeowners, you know, whether that is, that used to be, and it's expired now, but the residential energy tax credit. So it wasn't called the climate fund, but it funded a lot of the similar things that we're going to be able to fund too. You know, as we're getting a lot more serious, and unfortunately it's happening now, it didn't happen 10 years ago in the way it needed to, about climate. You know, there's conversations about a Green New Deal, other things, but it's just a general recognition that we need to transition the way our economy powers itself, the way that we operate, in a way that's substantially cleaner. And so, you know, they may be called different things. This isn't necessarily new. What's new about what we're doing is we're saying that we're not only investing in climate action. So we're not only investing in the kind of things that folks have seen, the solar panels, the street trees, workforce development, but we're doing all of those things in a way that also centers racial and social justice, making sure that folks that historically aren't getting the benefit, that Black and brown folks, low-income folks, are able to get these things on their homes, on their buildings, able to get these job trainings, and so much more, and to be part of the solution in a way that we've always been part of the solution, but haven't been seen in that same way. So.
Sam, for members of our community where climate change and just our relationship with the environment may be secondary or third to them, what are some of the things that you would, and I do say secondary to just trying to survive, just trying
That's
to pay
right.
bills,
That's right.
just trying to get by.
Yeah.
What are some of the things that you would say, or how would you kind of bridge that conversation for someone to try to get them a little bit closer to the understanding of how important these issues are, and also the tools that are available to help them navigate it?
You know, so much of this is, it's a matter of our survival in terms of coming to terms and addressing climate change. And so, you know, in the end, those that are most impacted by the impacts of climate change, which unfortunately are way too real, and are we feeling it too real in these past couple of years, certainly. So they fall on Black and brown folks, on low-income folks, on unhoused people first and most. And so as we eventually talk about that transition, it's critically important that we're right there and that these solutions are being thought with us in mind and are designed for us and by us. And so, you know, bringing it to home, at some point our energy systems, you know, the way that our electricity comes into our house, the things that power them are going to transition, and they are transitioning. And as part of that, it may get more costly. Mm-hmm. So if my neighbors around me have solar panels and are able to offset and reduce their energy bills because they have solar panels, but I don't, and now I have to pay higher bills because our system is transitioning, it means something in terms of my ability to both be part of the solution, but also not necessarily be left behind on some of the real economic benefits that come from being able to throw solar panels on my roof that may take my $120 a month electric bill and bring it down to 10, you know? I mean, that means I'm putting $1,200 a month in the, you know, that's what that means to me, that I get $1,200 a month a year into my pockets in that instance. And so it does come down to economics and our ability to be part of the solution, and so much more, but also to be, you know, to be able to be part of these jobs in this growing economy, also just on the workforce side and the contracting side.
I'm glad you brought up the jobs. I think that's often a factor that's overlooked. It's easy to, you know, mention to people, you can save money. You can save money on your electric bill. You can save money on all your bills. And we hear that a lot with anything people are trying to sell. But when you talk about workforce development and you're talking about, you know, getting ahead of the curve with these new jobs, that I think that's another element that needs to be discussed more frequently when we're having these conversations. So what brought you to this work? How'd you get here?
You know, my folks are from Ethiopia originally, and you know, for them, it is the environment is a thing that they've always intimately been around, and that's a case for all of us with, you know, that are from the African diaspora. We are connected to the land, and fortunately, from one way or another, have been removed from it or moved from it, and so that interest has sort of been. You know, my parents were good about cultivating that interest in me, but also, I mean, as a natural fact, my dad was cheap, you know, and he may hear this, but you know, I appreciate every time I flush that toilet, he'd be like, "That's 50 cents." So we were we were conserving whether or not, you know, we were doing the if it's yellow, let it mellow business for a long time before that ever became a thing. And so, you know, for me, that was a part of it, and understanding over time that, you know, we've been doing this. It just looked differently. And yeah. So, you know, I had the fortune to be exposed to this early on and make that a part of what I wanted to do. So it's a long path, but that's sort of maybe where it starts. And the journey kind of gets me at some point to here, and a lot of fortunate people in my life that have made sure that they've looked after me.
That's amazing. My father is Nigerian, and I definitely spent some time back home in my teenage years. And being able to travel the world and see how we live in other countries is extremely important, because sure, we may not have some of the same amenities that we experience here in the U.S., but there's a level of peace when you're that connected to nature, and there's a level of simplicity, there's a level of peace in the simplicity. And, you know, having to get a bucket of water to take a shower with, take a bath with, and it's okay. Like, no one's stressed out. You just warm the water up and that's it. You go down to the well, you get some more water. But to be able to see people here in the U.S. not have, with everything that we have going on, not have a peace of mind, not being able to just exist outside, inside, and be able to fend for themselves. It is troubling. It's troubling. I'm very grateful for organizations like the one you work for and for Community Energy Project to help kind of level the playing field, especially moving forward into this new technology and emerging changes with our relationship with energy. Like it's really, really important. I'm so grateful for that. But I definitely can relate to I don't want to call it penny pinching, but just the awareness of what every single thing costs as we were coming up. Okay, so the grant committee has a specific racial and ethnic requirement. Could you speak to that? I think it was very interesting.
Yeah. So we have a 9-person volunteer grant committee that is the body that ultimately makes the final funding recommendations to the Portland City Council. And they carry a lot of weight. And I mean, as I appreciate our entire council and the mayor, but if they want to deviate or disagree with the grant committee, they've got to state why. So there's just a lot of weight with this grant committee. And this was thought through deeply by the committee around how this body would be, and the funds in particular would be governed, and how they would be, you know, who would get to be able to make those decisions and inform those decisions. And the language within the code is that the committee has to be economically, racially, ethnically, and economically representative of the city. And we strove to make sure that it acknowledged those past times. And we have a majority POC committee, a majority women committee, and there's specific things around residents also living east of in East Portland. So it's there was a lot of intention when the city council seated the first 5 of the 9 committee members. That cohort of 5 folks then nominated the next 4 members, and from there on, they actually nominate their replacement committee members. Nice. And, you know, I think there's a beautiful part to our DNA in terms of coming from community, being an idea that was born of community, because it means that there is a, you know, folks are watching us, and it's right. Good. It's right. And it means that there is a, we will, you know, we've got that. We've got folks deeply vested in making sure that this program is implemented in the way that the folks that thought so hard about this program is being done. And so there's many ways, but it's a beautiful committee, and I encourage anyone to check out any of our committee meetings that happen in the evenings.
In a state with the history that it does, being that intentional with the committee with the makeup of the committee is pretty daring and very important. Has there been any pushback with some of the work that you're doing? I can imagine, you know, people maybe in some of the meetings or in the comments of whatever you may be sharing on social media. Has there been any pushback or criticism?
You know, it's, I think that in Portland, we're coming through a time where we're getting a better understanding of what racial and social justice is, and everyone is on their own journey in figuring that out, what that means to them and what that means in terms of how they show up. And so, you know, within the committee, we have the most, some of the most thoughtful discussions that I have seen any body, public body, have. So that's just a beautiful place that it is. It is one of the most thoughtful, you know, bodies I've had the fortune of working with. Externally, right, in terms of outside of that, it is hard always to be part of all those discussions and see how we come to the decisions that they you know, that we come to as that committee comes down, we share that out. And I think that at times that there is, you know, I think that it takes a while to fully internalize and understand what it means to develop organizations and what it means to evaluate proposals from communities that have never had the opportunity to do this sort of work. So we've received critique of some of our initial funding decisions. We've gone through one round of funding. It was our sort of beta round. We funded about $8.6 million in grant awards across 45 grants. And so we've heard that critique, and yet if anyone, and there's a lot of planning grants in there. And so if anyone sort of chimes in and takes a look, it's about really seeding those future projects and giving organizations that historically don't have the opportunity to step back and really think thoughtfully around how they want to approach this work, the resources to plan and think about how they want to do this work, and then come back to us in a year or so and put together a bigger proposal. And so that's, you know, so there's been, you know, there's been that sort of critique. And then just, you know, there's starting any new program takes time.
Yeah.
And so it takes time. It's going to take time for the community to fully socialize to this fund and understand how this fund can be used in betterment of the community. And so there's always the desire for us to move faster. I want to share, we're moving as fast as humanly possible. and so that just is something that I think it's always an undercurrent that there's this, and process takes time, and making sure we're inclusive takes time. And that's always a tension with things. So that desire, I think, out there of just get this done quicker, move, is there, and we're moving.
Can you tell listeners about some of the programs and some of the previous grants have been awarded?
Yeah. So this, you know, I want to share this first round, $8.6 million. We got $60 million funding availability coming up, opening up at the end of September.
That's
amazing. So we're coming, and then the next year is going to be bigger. So we're coming up, and it'll be bigger. And so I want to share, like, this is just we're just at the start of it. But in our first round, we funded 45 grants. We funded what I call 29 planning grants. These are resources to help organizations really plan their future projects and just do the assessments. Some folks were going into buildings and they were going to do audits and figure out what are all the things we can do to this particular building to make it more comfortable, better to work for us, to be a community hub, a community asset in the long term. So folks are just going to do that planning and then come back and ask for the real resources to do that work. Some folks were going to do community climate planning to figure out what kind of jobs, trainings, other things that folks want to do. So we have a range of planning grants that were really just that, to give folks the time and space to plan, right? And then we had 16 implementation grants. Those are grants where folks are going to go out and actually do the stuff. You know, they know what they want to do. They've been waiting to do it and they're doing it. And so, you know, I can speak to a handful of those, and I will just, you know, I think they're on our website so folks can go in and check in with those organizations. But, you know, we've got, I think, you know, you talked about the Community Energy Project. I'm excited to hear about that series, you know, where they're working on doing 20 deep energy retrofits on single family Black owned homes. You know, five of those folks with solar panels, you know, two of them with battery systems and whatnot. We've got, you know, some folks doing other additional deep retrofits of affordable housing to make sure that those are comfortable, those energy bills are lower, you know, that folks have what we call ductless heat pumps, so that, you know, people can actually have efficient heating that isn't going to break the bank and actually allow them to keep their place warm, but also cooling, because, I mean, I don't think I need to say it in this time, cooling is a real thing that we need to have. We've got folks doing matched savings funds to help Black homeowners access funding to do efficiency upgrades on their properties. We've got, we've got folks doing retrofits of affordable housing. So they're going in there and gutting some of their affordable housing and making sure that it is more efficient. And that's all on the energy side of it, including fixing up community buildings, churches, residential treatment facilities. Nice. We've got tree planting projects happening in the Columbia Slough and across the city, working with Black youth as part of your workforce development project. We're gutting pavement in parts of East Portland and a couple school properties to take the pavement out and put in shade trees, rain gardens, and native landscaping. So there's just a real difference. And we've got, community gardening projects too. So real diversity of sort of the projects that are getting stuff in the ground happening. And then we've got a handful of a workforce development projects. These are, funding going into youth workforce development as well as pre-apprenticeship programs so that we can train up, Black and brown folks, poor folks, women, others, to be able to get into these jobs that are high paying, these trades jobs that you come out without necessarily a 4-year college degree and make, well over 30 something an hour, So yes. we've got programs that funnel people into those programs and we'll set them up for success in those paths that are being funded.
So you talked about the fund, it's trending up, increasing as you're moving forward. But the source of the fund comes from some taxation. How is it that it's going to be trending up? Like how is that even happening?
Yeah. This is one of those things it's always a complicated thing to speak to because taxes and tax systems are inherently complicated. Mm-hmm. The corporations that were subject to what we call, it's actually called the clean energy surcharge, are subject to it. The first year they were responsible for it was tax year 2019. But that was the first year they're responsible for it, but they were all given a grace year. Essentially, no one was required to pay in for 2019 because it was the first year the measure was in place. They were going to be starting to pay in 2020. And starting in 2020, I don't want to go too far with this. Uh-huh. Businesses that are subject to it would start also have to make prepayments on their taxes. So we essentially in 2020 is when a lot of funds started rolling in because we started collecting 2019 money. And we started collecting on a regular basis 2020 money. So the fund has started to populate in while we were still just getting up. We just got our grant committee seated at the, essentially at the end of 2019. So it's a portion of we started collecting money later on, really got staffed up and seated. So we're operating on a lag. And so we've built up some funds and we're going to be spinning those out. And it's just making sure it's aligned with developing the good internal systems and infrastructure so that we can get this money out in a way that is accountable to the to the public, but also meets community needs and is responsive and sets up a framework so that folks can actually apply for the program. So it's sort of, we're always operating where we're going to always have a balance and then we're going to push the money out. Then we'll work down that balance. And so that's, what these next few years, what you're going to see is you're going to see us ramp up, but generally speaking, we still, there's still a lot of uncertainty on what that final annual fund value is. What we know right now is we've got a balance, but on an annual basis, we're getting $40 to $60 million a year.
That is amazing.
And it's here to stay, provided we make sure that we hold up our end of the bargain and do what we said we're going to do. That is obviously, it is the voters voted this in and folks can certainly take this out. So we want to make sure we're here to stay and make sure we're doing the good work within the community.
That's absolutely amazing. Is there a list of the corporations that are funding it, that are involved?
No, this is one of those things that are held under lock and key because, some of them are publicly traded and certainly folks can back in and maybe make assumptions around who sort of fits that mold. But I've never seen a list. And so that is something that even I don't have access to.
Yeah, that would be great to be able to, from a consumer standpoint, engage with those businesses even more frequently, just knowing that they are contributing in some way to the community and positive change. Are there any particular types of projects that you would like to see more of that possibly we just don't have enough of right now that are applying for these grants?
You know, we're just getting started. So the piece of this that we're waiting to see what this next round, we open in late September is going to look like in terms of, the ideas that come to us. And what I will say is there's a desire within the committee, and I think it's a recognition that we've done, I'd say collectively in the public realm, like we've had programs out there that do all sorts of different things, but the problems that we are coming up against collectively, societally, are going to take a lot more hands on board to address. You know, we talk about workforce development. It's not just about, just the training itself. It's about making sure folks have the childcare, folks have the transportation to the jobs, folks have all these other things that can support them and being able to show up every day and be on the job site, but also like making sure that there are advocates for workers on these sites or resources around them to make sure that as unfortunately the things that happen on job sites do happen are able to be addressed real quickly so that we get to keep folks on there and prevent both racist, misogynistic actions from happening on site. So there's just there's a so I say that to say that what is exciting and what I think we hope to call in and hope to see, but welcome all the proposals, is proposals that are thinking through those complexities and working across partnerships with multiple organizations. And I think one thing I should have said early on is the program is geared towards nonprofits. So nonprofits have to be the primary applicant. They have to be the applicant, but they can partner with other for-profits, other nonprofits, government. I mean, we expect, that it isn't just a nonprofit building these things up. But and so just wanting to see greater collaborations that are thinking more holistically, more completely around all the things you need to kind of solve these things. So whether, when you're doing this work on people's homes, is there a workforce development component to that that's bringing in youth or bringing in folks that are, that are underemployed and bringing them into these jobs? Just thinking through that collective piece. And over time, we probably start calling that in as we have a better sense for how to do that as a staff and as a committee. But I think that what we have set up at least encourages that as well.
That's interesting. I don't think I've ever would have thought about the other supportive programs that need to exist in order for people to participate. And I love that concept of a nonprofit partnering with these other for-profit programs to fulfill those needs. Because as you were describing it, I was thinking like, well, how would, an organization that takes care of childcare and transportation, how would they even be able to apply to something like this? But partnering with the proper nonprofit to help create the structure around that would be the best way to do that. That's
Right,
awesome.
right, right, right. Exactly. Whether it's folks that are able to readily provide vouchers for transportation, other things, all that, that it takes a lot to break these. And people that start nonprofits are, we're mission oriented people oftentimes, and so it takes understanding where, you may need to, shore your strengths, shore some of those areas up with others.
If there were some words you would like to leave, or you want our listeners to really dwell on with regards to the opportunities your organization are working on right now and the change that they're trying to, spearhead and see, what would some of that information be? What would some of those words be?
I think big. I mean, think big at the same end. There is I can appreciate that there's so many talented new groups coming up and it's beautiful to see. And so I hope that folks get connected to your community organizations, your mutual aid groups, all the folks around you, and figure out what's your role and how does that connect? Because I could say so many things connect to climate change in the way that we in the ways that we live on the day-to-day basis, whether it's the food we eat, the cars, the transportation systems we move through, the homes and everything else that keep a roof over our head and how they're powered. So as well as just the jobs that we jump into. So I think that there's so many ways to get connected and for this program to be able to make a meaningful change. And I think it's certainly on us to listen. But I just want to say, think big, get connected to organizations around you. And if that organization doesn't exist, start thinking about creating your own organization. And that's just obviously that there's a lot that goes there. And I don't want to, but I think big.
Right. I like that. That reminded me of those memes that went around when the stimulus checks went out, and it was like, the LLC memes. What you need to do is create your organization, take a portion of that, start your LLC, flip it bounce. It's like, oh, okay, all right.
There's real work we need to make sure that the folks are thinking through long term, and that isn't an easy thing, but
No.
I do believe we have a great cohort or a nonprofit network, and at the same, and I know that there's still going to be gaps in that. So certainly encourage folks to get connected with their community groups and see how PSEF can be a reality for them, but also to where those gaps exist to step into it.
Yeah. I'm encouraged with the increased conversation around climate. I feel like I'm learning so much more with every new challenge that we're facing. When we were talking about the heat waves coming this year, I came across some information online talking about how low-income areas, especially from where I'm from on the East Coast, where there aren't as many trees, how those areas are inherently hotter because of the lack of trees and the pavement heating up and the street heating up. And it was like rocket science when it hit me. It was like, wait, what? And to drive around some of the communities here and see, we have so many trees and the intentionality of planting trees, and just there's just so much for us to learn. And I'm really grateful for these type of conversations that we can share with our listeners. And I feel like the more we talk about this, the more innovation we'll get from our youth, and then they'll start coming up with more ideas and concepts, and then hopefully bringing some of those concepts to you guys.
That's it takes a long time. Some of these big trees we see, those are 80-year trees, right? And
Right.
so it's plant them today because it will take time. And so we certainly welcome youth and others come in and elevating those ideas. And we're excited to see them.
Yeah. How can people find out more information about PCF?
All right. We got a city website. So it's a starting place is portland.gov/BPS/clean energy. So that's a starting place for just seeing what's going on and tracking that. That's going to get better over time. We're still building that content up and figuring out how to make sure we're able to communicate to different audiences. But that's the starting place. And then that's a place where folks can see our awardees that came through our last round, and that's the one place just to check out and see if you're connected to an organization that either got awarded a grant last round, or that got or that maybe didn't, to work with them and see about getting about working on a different proposal. And then we've got several different funding opportunities outside of just our big grant application for the $60 million. We do have a mini grants program. Every single quarter, we release about up to $100,000 for in $5,000 increments. So organizations can apply for up to $5,000 to do little community projects, right? They can do community gatherings, community listening sessions focused on thinking around potential projects. They could do community build community garden boxes, so there's a whole range of things that's a little bit more easier. It comes around more frequently every quarter, and it's a much more simple application. So there's a few things we have, but all of that is at portland.gov/BPS/clean energy.
All right, you guys, you've heard it here. Please, please take advantage of these opportunities. Head on over to the site, take a look at some of the things that are available to you, some of your organizations, some of us as individuals. And Sam, thank you so much for your time today, sir.
And likewise, thank you. It's my pleasure.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope that you found it informative. For any additional information, be sure to head on over to communityenergyproject.org. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode. Feel free to leave questions in the post wherever you may see this episode. Until next time.